Right. I have a friend who hold on a second. We're recording. We're not gonna be on Facebook today. I decided we're not gonna we let people watch the election. Nobody's gonna watch this on Facebook, but we'll record this class anyway on some mechanism of some form. And what we're gonna discuss is actually an article that I saw, I believe it was Rabbi Bick in the Virtual Beit Midrash, who asked a question, which I think is a pretty important question. His answer was interesting, and I'll share that with well. I want to share the whole. So in this week's Parsha, we have Parsha Vayera. Now, what is Vayera? Of course, is probably like jam-packed, one thing after the other, right? You have the story of Abraham welcoming in these angels of some form. You have the battle of Sodom, the destruction of Sodom. You have the kidnapping of Sarah for the Plishtim. And you have the expulsion of Ishmael, and you have the binding of Yitzchak. So you have all of these with a few other things in between, and it's like a whole jam-packed, but you can easily get lost by looking at either loss of some of the specifics of the story, which are really big questions. And so when we read our story, and let's go to the text, let's go to the videotape. Hold on a second. Okay, so we're going to go to. Right, so here is how we begin. Avram, Hashem appeared to Avram the plains of Mamre, and he was sitting at the entrance of the tent when the day was hot, in the middle of the hot part of the day. And of course, we're painted this midrash, which tells us that this is immediately following the end of last week's parsha. What happened at the end of last week's parsha? Brit Milah, right? Good. Well, that's great. So Avram had his Brit Milah at the age of 99 years old. Oy vey, right? You can imagine this wasn't so easy. And it's kechom hayom, and Rashi immediately says that it was on the third day, which is the most painful. And how do we know that, by the way? I didn't know the third day, so because I asked the baby. The baby actually, yeah, the baby didn't seem to respond. And they asked the baby boy, which day hurt the most, right? You don't have that, right? So we have them in the story of Shimon and Levi that they attacked on the third day after the Shem circumcised. And so we make this whole connection that it must have been the third day, it's most painful, etc. And that's the day of recovery. It's when the anesthesia wears off. I don't know, the marijuana, the medical marijuana, the recreational marijuana, whatever it is. Right, so if you're listening to this recording, you didn't hear the talk before the recording, so we're not bringing up marijuana for no reason. So that the Midrash is telling that God is visiting and doing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and all that is very nice. Vayisa'inav, and he raised his eyes. Vayar, and he saw, v'hinei shalosh ha'anashim nitzavim alav, and he behold, three men were coming, were standing there. Vayar, and he saw, vayar etz lekratzam, v'petzach ha'ol, and he went to greet them at the entrance of the tent, Vishtachu Arza, and he bowed down to them. Now, let us take this for a second. Actually, let's look at Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer, and he said, Adoni imna metzatichin be'enecha, anna tavor me'al avdecha. My master, if you find favor in my eyes, if I find favor in your eyes, do not pass from before your servant. Now, actually, there are two ways to understand that verse and who's speaking, right? Who do we think is speaking? Verse 3.
Avram.
To
these three men.
That would make sense. However, it seems to be that they're speculating that Avram is actually speaking to his master. Who is his master? Well, the person Vayera Elav Hashem Elone Mamre, that Hashem was with him at Elone Mamre. Hashem had visited him. And so he says, actually, he turns to God, although it seems to be out of order when it says he ran to greet them, but he turns to God and says, excuse me, please let me, do not pass on from beside your master, meaning, God, I'm sorry, don't leave, I'll be right back. I have guests, and I need to take care of them. And the Gemara tells us, from here we learn, that the mitzvah of haknasat arachim, of welcoming guests, is more important than actually even receiving the Shekhinah. Because that's even more, that's one interpretation, I think that's the Ramban who says that. That's one explanation. What I want to understand is a few things that are missing here. The first thing is that it says Vayera Elav Hashem Be'Eloni Mamre, and that God appeared to him in Eloni Mamre, and he was sitting in the tent Cholmayom. Immediately, the Midrash tells us, as we said, that he went to visit him, right? He was doing Bikur Cholim. Why does the Midrash say that? Remember, the Midrash is always there to sort of fill in a hole, right? So it's very nice. It could be that's true. Why does the Midrash need to say that? What was the Midrash? What was the question that the Midrash had that had to come to that conclusion? This is how Rabbi Eben likes to learn. They can step back.
I guess so it's to understand why he'd be sitting at the entrance in the middle of the day.
So number one is, why is Avram there? Right? Yeah. Why is Avram there? So I said, Avram there. It didn't have to say. Avram was there. It could be Avram. That's what Avram did every day. Yechol Mayom, right?
Right, but even if he did that every day, they're only saying it here.
They're only saying it here, well, because this is when he had this encounter that they want to record. There were many encounters that took place, but this is the one that the text wanted to record, right? So, and so what was so significant about it? Well, I can tell you, the three men turned out to be three angels. That was pretty significant, right? But why does, let me answer the question here. Why does the Midrash have to say that God was coming to visit Avraham to see how he was feeling on the third day? And the answer is because we don't know why God is here. Vayere alav Hashem ba'aloni mamre. God appeared to him in aloni mamre. He was sitting at the entrance of the tent. Chomayom. So usually God doesn't just show up and hang out unannounced, or maybe he shows up unannounced. It doesn't just, usually there's a reason why he can't show up. Right? There's a reason God has something to say, right? And he comes and he gives us this, he'll say, your children will be like the stars of the sky and the sand of the sea. He'll say, don't be afraid and don't be whatever. He'll say something, right? It's not, God doesn't just show up without a message. And there's a message, the message here is missing. We'll never really find that God is it's a strange thing, but you're on Hashem, God appeared to him. And then you're expecting a unbelievable transformational moment. But it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. The whole point of the Parsha Vayera, Parsha Vayera means God appeared. Usually when God appears, there's a reason why God appeared and is there to share a message of some form. Want to hear the question? Sarit, you hear the question?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so you got called on. That's what happens when you have a small class. Okay, good. So that's the first question. Here's the second question. Immediately he leaves God, right, and he runs to greet these men, which we could assume he thought were men, right? But instead, they turn out to be angels. And so God had sent angels to inform Avraham. How many angels are there? Three. And Rashi immediately, according to Midrash, tells us that they each had a job. What were the three jobs? One was to inform Avraham and Sarah that they were going to have a baby, which they do. The other was to heal Avraham, that would be Raphael. And the third was Malach Gabriel to destroy Sodom, which is why later on, says Rashi, later on, we only have two angels who greet Lot, assuming because there were only two men. One apparently got lost. They left him in the bathroom or whatever it is. And so he's only stuck with two men, two angels, right? And actually, and they're only left with two. So here Rashi tells us, we learned that they only had one job to do, right? Angels do one job, and after they do that job, they're done, right? So the question we're going to ask is what is the purpose of these angels coming to Avraham? What does an angel do in general?
So why does the Torah call them Anashim then?
Very good question, right? That's the second question. Because here they're referred to as Anashim. And then later on, if we continue going down, it tells us, Meikum Misham HaAnashim, it tells them they're referred to as Anashim. The whole time the men arose and they leave. And then it's only later that when we go into our friend Lot, after the whole negotiation that Avram has, should he destroy it, It says in the verse 1, right? Now we have the scene of Lot, which clearly is meant for us to compare the two stories because they're so similar in nature, right? Of Lot's story of Hachnasat Archim and Avram's story of Hachnasat Archim, which is not for our class now, but is clearly obvious that's what the text wants us to do. But they're not, what do they refer to here? Vayavo Shnei Hamalachim. They're referred to as angels, right? So we know they were angels anyway, right? But well, they're referred to here as angels, but here they're referred to as Anashim, and here they're referred to as Malachim, okay? So that's how we knew they were angels because they were the same people who came and they went to, but here they're Malachim, they're referred to as angels. Now, what I want to ask, going back to our question is, what do angels do? What's their role in this world? Now, people have asked me, does Judaism believe in angels? I'm like, yeah, if you look at the Torah all over, and especially Sefer Bereshit, right? Sefer Bereshit has angels everywhere, right? Yaakov has angels that escort him, not just on that dream, but Yaakov has angels that escort him when he goes back to Eretz Yisrael. There are angels that show up at the end of Parshat Vayetze. Was it they're angels, right? And so there are angels and even Yaakov says, "Hamalach Agol Otimi Korah," the angel that redeemed me from all bad should bless these children, right? So angels were very, very real, right? God says, "I'm going to send an angel that will lead the Jewish people through the desert." Angels are very real. We believe in angels, not just in Midrashic text, but in the text itself. And if you go through Sefer, go through the Nevi'im, you'll see that there are angels. There's an angel that comes to speak to Gidon. There's an angel that speaks to Manoach and Eshet Manoach, right?
Yaakov wrestled with an angel.
Yaakov wrestles with an angel. So we have angels here, right? There's angels that are guarding the Garden of Eden and the ever turning flaming sword, which is just so cool to say, right? So yeah, sure, there are angels. The question is, what are angels for, right? Now, generally, we say that word malach is an angel. What's the definition of that word malach? We translate as angels, but actually, it means emissary, messenger, like a shliach, right? So we assume that these angels are being sent in place of God. Right, the angel comes, you know, there and sort of takes the role of God for whatever reason. The angels, God doesn't speak to them directly. The angels speak to them directly as an emissary of God and doing God's work. So, if that's the case, if that's how we understand what angels are, so asks Rabbi Bick the following very simple question: how did we start off? We started off that God appeared to Abraham, Elonei Mamre, right? And then he sends angels who don't go on their own. They have to follow. In fact, if you look at the beginning of Iov, the first chapter of the book of Iov, it says that God sends the Satan, or the Satan seems to say, "Hey God, you know, I think we gave Iov some trouble, that we could challenge his faith." That's basically, if you look at the book of Iov, it's the book of Job, that's what it says. And God says, okay, you could do whatever you want, just don't kill him. That's what he says, right? But in other words, the Satan cannot do anything. Satan is an angel, and the angel can't do anything without God's instructions. God has sent them down. I can see this like thing, they send them down, right? And they land on earth, and they do what they're supposed to do, and then they go back up, and that's the angels. Like, everybody remember Michael Landon in Highway to Heaven? Or he was an angel, no? Nobody watched Michael Landon? Okay, I'll stop. All right.
When I was a kid. No.
These are shows that the last time I watched television, this is what I remember. All right, so if that's the case, why does God need to send an angel? He's right here. God appears to Avram, is having a conversation which we don't really know because it doesn't say what the conversation is. And then it says that an angel came to give Abraham a message. Well, why doesn't God give him the message directly? Right? Good question. We have another time where an angel actually gives God Abraham a message in the place of God. Where do we have that? The end of the Akedah.
Right.
Right? The end of the Akedah, it tells us God told him, Vayomer Elav Avraham, Vayomer Hineni, and we have here, and he says, gives him the instruction, Lechla Eretz Maria, take your Maria, take your only son, the one that you love, etc., and bring it to Lana, bring it as a karban, and Avram does that, and then he says, and then what happens? And then you have verse 11, when God stops him, Vayikra Elav Malach Hashem in Hashemayim, Vayomer Avraham, Vayomer Hineni, right? So the angel, God sends an emissary to stop him. First sends and says, don't do that. And then in verse 10, Vav, Vayikra Malach Hashem Elav Avraham Shenit min Hashemayim. Then a second angel comes.
So you have the same question here, because God was there at the beginning and he went away, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
In fact, there are questions about why does Avram listen to this angel? Right? If I got instructions from the, for lack of a better term, from the big guy, from the boss, right? What do I need instructions? I want to, and this is pretty big, like, if he's saying more important for him than to bring him as a sacrifice was him not to kill him, right? Wouldn't you want to be sure, if I was giving those instructions, if I was the boss, I want to make sure that he knew, this is what I don't kill him because he can't do this again. We can't fix this. If you don't go the first place, well, then okay, fine. It's disappointing and it doesn't make a good movie, right? But if you fail to kill, if you do kill him when you're not supposed to, that's really bad. And you would think that God would do this directly rather than send an emissary. Okay, good. We're still in our question. So I want to know what's the role of these angels in general. And we're going to go back to chapter 18. I'm going to ask one more question. Okay. Next question is, what was the first, we said the angels, there were three angels. One was to heal Abraham, one was to destroy Sodom, and the first angel, as we refer to him, was the angel to inform Abraham that he was going to have, Abraham and Sarah, they were going to have a baby, right? In fact, that's what it says. They feed them, by verse 9, Vayomer Elav Ayeh Sarah Shtecha, they say, where is Sarah, your wife? She's in the tent, because she was the nua and all these things that Rashi likes to say, that women belong in the kitchen by the sink. That's not true. I'm just telling you, that's what it seems to imply. He said, I will surely return to you this time of year, and it will be a son to Sarah, your wife. Sarah,
my mother-in-law just stopped by, so I have to.
No problem. Okay, send regards. And says, all right, it's me and you, Elliot. So it says, and Sarah said, Chavruta. There you go. And Sarah says, and Sarah was behind, and she was behind in the back, right? So this says, I will surely return in a year, and your child, and Sarah will have a, he may ben the Sarah Ishtacha, right? So that's an important message, correct? So the problem with that message is, that we already, yeah. You look at last week's Parsha, at the end of last week's Parsha, in Perek Yud Zayin, it tells us, hold on a second. Pasuk Yutet, Vayomer Elokim. Aval Sarah Ishtecha Yoledet Lecha Ben. Sarah, your wife, is going to have a child. Karata et Shemo Yitzchak. And you're going to call it Yitzchak, right? There was no suspense on what the name was going to be, right? They had very little discussion, right? It was pretty clear. By the way, Isaac's bris took place in Parsha Vayera, as Bar Mitzvah Parsha, part of Lecha. This is when we named him, right? Worked out well. There we go.
I was going to say, timing couldn't be better.
We couldn't have planned this any better, right? We were going to name him Bullock, by the way, but if he got, depending on which year he was born, which time of the year. So that name probably making a comeback. So, and Vakimoti, it's Briti, Itel, Lebrit, Olam, Lazar, Acharav. And I'll make this covenant, this everlasting covenant, with seed, et cetera, et cetera. So what we're describing of this message that the angel is coming, right, and says, don't worry, I'm going to be back in a year, right? we already got that message. Avram already got this message. And if we're following the time frame that the Midrash wanted to tell us, that this was 3 days after the Brit Milah, so it's only 3 days later. You know, a few days ago, he already got, like, if I'm Avram, I'm like, yeah, no, I got that. I got that, right?
Right. And he got it right from God here.
And here I got it directly from God, from right the boss himself. There, it's a possibility that some of the commentaries want to propose that say, well, maybe this was for Sarah, right? Maybe this was for Sarah. Maybe Avram didn't tell Sarah. You know, he just didn't get a chance because he was busy with the bagels and stuff for the bris, and so it didn't have time to tell Sarah. Maybe that's a possibility, right? So that there are those who propose that, although
it doesn't fit with the text.
It doesn't what?
It doesn't really fit with the text. I mean, it seems to be directed towards Avraham. It says your ishtecha, right? It's your wife. It's not talking to Sarah.
Right. So he should have, well, here it's clear that Sarah doesn't know this yet. Right. Sarah is going to have to hear this from Avram directly. And maybe she wanted to hear directly, you know, at least a better source than her husband. My wife never believes anything I say. Right. So she wanted a better source. That's a possibility. Although, again, or maybe he didn't tell her, which is what they propose. But the truth is that when they do give this information, go back to the next chapter. When they do give this information, they refer to her as Ayes Sarah Eshtecha. Where is Sarah, your wife? Now, if Avram was not telling the story, which I don't know what they're going to do. It's not like, you know, I mean, he didn't have any business trips. He didn't go to Minyan, right? There was nobody. I mean, he was hanging out with his friends, alone with Mamre and the Mamre people, right? And that's, you know, that's a possibility. But, you know, you got to imagine at some point he comes home from the end of the day and he says, by the way, sorry, I forgot to tell you, God spoke to me. And what did he say? In addition to this having a baby, guess what? They legally changed your name. You're going to have to re-register, you know, for elections and stuff like that. Change your license or your library card, the whole work, right? It's a big deal. Your passport. And here they already used the news name. Vayomra Elav Aye Sarah Ishtepka. They don't say where's Sarai and Avram didn't tell her. He must have told her. If he's going to tell her about the change of name, he probably would have mentioned, oh yeah, and there's a chosen one. You're 90 years old. You're 89 at the time. You're going to have a child. And I even know the name. I know the gender and I know the name. And he's going to receive the covenant. So, yes.
But also from the Pasuk Tet and Pasuk Yud, it's clear that the angel was retelling Avraham. Sarah only overheard.
Right.
Well, doesn't sound like he was trying to, he right. And what's bizarre is he says, where's your wife? Figuring that maybe he was going to tell his wife, and then he proceeds to tell him, and she only overhears. Right.
So that's what Rashi says when he says, Ayesar Eshtecha, he says, because she was in the tent, and that's where she's supposed to be, because of Tzniut. It could be that was the culture. That was the culture, and that he would speak out loud, and that's where she would get the message. That's a possibility. That could be what the way things worked in those days in that place. I don't know, but that's a possibility. But even still, it doesn't really make sense to say that Avram is going to tell her her new name, but not tell her this important news, not tell her that God spoke to her, etc., etc. They put all these questions, and we review our question. The first question is, what does God say? What is the purpose of God appearing to Avraham, right? And doesn't say anything. If we're ignoring the Midrash for a second, which we do sometimes, right? Number two is, why does God send angels if he could just tell them himself? And our third question is why does, and the role of angels in general, and our third question is that why do the angels tell this information that has already been told? I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer all of the questions. But I want to share with you what Rabbi Bick's idea on how to read this parsha, and it changes things significantly on how we understand things in general. So if we go back to the end of last week's parsha, okay, so we are introduced to this. He Avraham ben Tishim Shana, B'Teisha Shanim. Avram was 99 years old. Avram Hashem Avram Ani Kel Shakai Hetzalech Lefanai Beheyet Tamim. I am Kel Shakai, right? And this is a God is introducing himself. Walk before me and you will be perfect. Now, we know that, and it's important to know at least, that when God has 70 names, right? Most popular being Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? And then we have the two Yuds, Adoni, all these different names that God has, and Elohim, Kel, each time, and this is like an important thing to note, because when you read this in the Kabbalah, takes this to, you know, to a much broader spectrum, but when you're reading this, if you see the words Hash Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elohim, that means something. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, right? The fact that it talks about the word Hashem means one thing, and the word Elokeinu means another thing. So the different references of God's name are the different aspects of God that we're relating to. We know about Midat Adin and Midat Rachamim and all these other things, the merciful, etc. There are different attributes of God that we're going to be connecting to based on the name. And here, this name Shakai Shindal Yud is a different name. We've never seen this before, right? And so here we're introducing this, whatever it means. And then it says, I am Kel Shakai, meaning you might not have known this. You might know me as another God because I've spoken to you several times, but I'm reintroducing myself in a different way. And Vayet, walk before me, and Vayet Tamim, you will be perfect. Now this phrase, Tamim, is a very difficult phrase to understand, right? We know, where do we see this word before? So we say, Noach Ish Tzadik, Tamim Haya Bedoratav, right? And then we have that whole interpretation. Was it a positive? Was it a negative? It's a compliment or derogatory. And then Yaakov is referred to as an Ishtam, Yoshev Oalim, right? And so it's an unclear what that word means, right? We translate it as perfect, right? You'll be perfect. And it doesn't really, you know, nothing's perfect except for my wife, right? And so what does it mean that to be perfect? What Rabbi Bick wants to propose is that phrase, when God comes to Avram in this scene, he is introducing a new relationship that he's having with Avram at this point. And that new relationship is centered around this Tmihut. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So what he's explaining is that, you know, one of the things that becomes, one of the things in the story of creation, or rewinding a little bit, in the story of creation, there is an inner tension on the role of man, right? Is are human beings, are they earthly creatures or are they heavenly creatures? That's really the question, right? That God blows the nishmat apayim, this ruach elokim is blown into human beings, but so they're not animals, they're a higher celestial being, but they live on this earth. It's really a conflict, and there's an inner tension that takes place all the time, and the truth is that we're always asking the question, am I giving into my animalistic tendencies, or am I giving into my celestial tendencies, my divine tendencies? And that's always the question, right? So if you're, that's a constant tension with every human being, right? That's why when you eat the whole bag of potato chips and you say, I can't believe I ate the whole thing, right? So you're really, that is the tension. What do you mean? I didn't need this. I didn't want it. I gave it to temptation and I ate it because I wasn't thinking of what it means to do this on a higher calling. So that constant tension, and really God's mandate with humankind was to be able to say, you are created B'Tselem Elokim, and you are going to bring godliness into this world through your acts. Unfortunately, that fails. We've talked about it a number of times, right? We have the failure of Adam, we have the failure of Cain and Hevel, or Cain, we have the failure of Noach, and now we have Abraham. And Avram being chosen, which is another fascinating discussion about what chosenness means, right? So chosen doesn't mean to the exclusion of all others, but it does mean, as we read in the Haftorah last week, that it's God's favorite, right? That's what it really means. That doesn't mean right? I tell all my kids, now you're my, like, today you're my favorite, right? You have to earn to be my favorite. It changes every day, depending on what you do. Good, today you're my favorite. So God says that Avram, you're going to be the favorite. You're going to be the favorite. And with that comes a special relationship. That special relationship seems to be, as Rabbi Bick is proposing, is that it is a different covenant. The covenant here is it's almost a more familiarity, a relationship where Avram can sort of be intertwined with those two worlds. And I don't want to sound so esoteric about what that means, but if you see, it does make more sense as Rabbi Bick says this, because first, obviously, he changes his name. He says, you're no longer this, and we're going to have this covenant. Why? And he says that you'll be Tamim. Tamim is a reference of a perfect being, right? So that's a celestial being of some form. And then, even as we started in the beginning of this week's parsha, it tells us right away. What does it tell us? Vayar Elav Hashem Baloni Mar. God appeared to him without a message. God is just hanging out. God is just hanging out with Abraham without a message. Just, you know, whatever. Because when you are in that comfort zone where you can hang out now with me, I don't need to make an appointment. I don't even need to say anything profound or earth-shattering. I can just welcome. I can just appear. And even for the angels to show up, it's not for Abraham. They're referred to as Anashim. For Lot, they're Malachim. But for Abraham, they're Anashim. Because why? Because they're on a parallel. They're on an even plane as Abraham himself. And this really gets proven by this very important phrase, which is why, in my opinion, one of the more important psukim in all of the Torah. If you go down to the text, it tells us verse 17, Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, "Bahashem amar, amechaseh ani me'avram asher ani oseh." Should I cover up and conceal from Avram what I'm about to do? What does that mean? Why wouldn't I compare? And then he says, why? And Avram will become a great and powerful nation. All the nations of the world will be blessed in him. He adative, because I have known Lamana Sheyitzavet Banavet Peito. I have known him because he has commanded his children and his household. Afterwards, Vishamu Derech Hashem, that they keep the ways of God. Lasot Sedaka Umishpat, to do righteousness and justice. In order the Lord will bring upon Avram that which he spoke concerning him. So first of all, the question of why Avram is chosen, that is Pasuk Yotet. Pasuk Yotet, Avram is chosen because he's going to raise his family in with the values that Avram believes in, and that on the values of God. That is, and I always say, why was Avram chosen? We have all these midrashim about the that we studied recently about the cherry tree, the idol store and chopping down the idol store and the cherry tree. That was a different story, whatever. This is the reason. This is the reason it says in Pasuk Yotet. This is why God chose Avraham. But the language itself, I can't cover up with Avraham. We're friends. We have a relationship. We have a partnership. I can't not tell him. It would be inappropriate, says God. And it really seems to be that all of Sefer Vayera is this introduction to this new type of relationship that Avram benefits or has in this world since from the Brit Milah.
Why in the Akedah are the angels referred to as angels? They should be referred to as Anashim. If they're on an equal plane, Avraham and the angels, why is it only here that they're called Anashim and over there they're called Malachim?
You ask a good question. I don't know. I don't have an answer. I think I can, again, because I'll just throw my hat in. I think this text and this narration is meant specifically to compare to the next chapter, which is the narration with Lot. And it wants to make the distinction of Lot's experience and Avram's experience. For Avraham, they're Anashim. for Lot, they're malachim. Really, they're malachim, right? Really, they are malachim. But I think that I'm throwing this as a possibility. These two chapters go together, and therefore they need to be make that distinction. And then in the chapter 22, it's a chapter in and of itself, and doesn't need to have to make that distinction. I don't know, but that to me sounds like a pretty good answer. Sounds good.
Sounds good.
If I say it with confidence, it works.
It's all how you say it.
It really is the way I say it. So what we're reading here, and like that should not be undersold and underappreciated. We are reading, as we begin chapter, Parshat Vayera is completely different than Parshat Lech Lecha. Because Parshat Vayera, Avram has developed this new relationship, it's a playing field, lack of a better term, with God, really as in this the closest thing that a human could come to being an angel or living in that other world, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, which where we see that he actually is able to live in both worlds, and that humans have that potential in them, one that Avraham as well as Moshe attained, and that we see, and that if we read that with that in mind, so much of the chapters change. If we come to different, really the way we read the whole story seems to have a different perspective. Thoughts, questions, comments?
Digest
that. There's more. I mean, there are holes in this theory, but I think there are more things make sense than the holes itself. So, when I was reading this with Rabbi Bick wrote, it seemed to be, something's going on here, right? And that even he's the angel coming in, it could be the angel is there to speak to Sarah, because angels hang out there all the time. It's not a crazy idea, not a novel thing that an angel will come and hang out with Abraham, because that's at this point where he is, where in the playing field he is right now. In this, he is really much closer to a celestial being than a human, than an earthly being. Something, again, I don't want to sound too heretical. You know, that sounds a little heretical, but something has changed. Something has very much changed. And that, I think the text, and I think this scene is trying to introduce that in that first opening chapter of Parshat Vayera. Okay.